All right, thank you for showing up, and thanks to Dawn for having this. The way it happened is very organic, spontaneous. I had talked to two women about 30 years old, like within a day or so, and both mentioned doing some kind of like temporary drug prescription, drug type of thing, just to get focused or whatever was going on. And I started thinking about that, and I started thinking like, well, a lot of my stuff, I do arts presentations, and it's great for what it is, but I was thinking it's like a curveball. It's like, because you try to reach people through the arts. So I just was walking around thinking, what could I give a talk on about, like, to get right to it. So I got the phrase in my head, finding serenity in the digital world. So then I came in here and I mentioned it to Dawn, and she was like, oh, if you want to do a talk here, you can do a talk here. So I was like, okay. So I kind of worked my way backwards from having no idea what I would actually talk about to thinking about it for a couple of weeks, and here we are, basically. So I haven't given this particular talk before, so it may ramble around a bit, but definitely have some points to make. And I would like to start off with the singing bowl, which is emblematic of serenity. And that is, I think, a reference point. I was thinking about, what does the bowl mean tonight? It's a reference point, because without a reference point of serenity or whatever else you might want to experience, without that reference point, I think it's easier to get lost, as a lot of people are seemingly kind of lost in the technology. And it happens to me too sometimes. I get so into being online and this and that, like, I forget what else is going on. So I think having a reference point that you can sort of like an anchor to go to is good to remember, so to avoid getting lost in the technology. Because, you know, a lot of people, it's sort of stereotypical nowadays, people are walking around looking at the gadgets, and that's one of the things I want to talk about, a way to balance that. And they're just, you know, oblivious to whatever, the birds or the sun or whatever, or they'll stop and take a photo. But what about the actual experience? So anyway, we'll start with this. Yeah, I want to start. One thing I want to mention, this, are you familiar with the Tao Te Ching, the Chinese philosophy? Yeah, it goes back like at least 2,500 years. So the other day I was reading a little bit, and I had read it before, but it just like really jumped out at me. So I'll read that bit, because it's like written for today, but back then they didn't have the gadgets. The more clever the devices the people, this is a translation, but the more clever the devices the people have, the more confused the state and the ruling house. The more scientific knowledge there is, the stranger the anomalies that spring up. Therefore, ruling a state through information actually weakens the state. And then it goes on to say, like, natural simplicity and nature is, like, the way. So I just found that just incredible. Like, the more the clever the devices people have, the more confused, and the more scientific knowledge, the stranger just seems to exactly describe what is going on nowadays. It's like, you know, people just like go by the science a lot and without the spirit of things as much. And then the devices is just like more and more devices. And sure, it's great, it's helpful if you want to use it, but it just sort of has this, it just goes on and on to the point where it's like, We think we're, I think that's part of, like, we think we're advancing or making some progress, but I wonder, like, are we, you know, I think the technology, a lot of it is like, we think we're solving problems, but it's almost like we're making more problems in some ways. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of positives and, you know, good things I could say about technology. I use it. You know, people can network online and watch videos and, you know, all that good stuff, but rather that's, people know what that is. So rather than, so things that I say tonight, it's not like I'm not totally, you know, dissing the technology. I just, you know, it's up to everybody to decide what, how much they use it and how they use it. Some people argue like, no, you can't, you know, there's this like, you can use it for good kind of talk. And some people say, well, that's just not looking at the bigger picture. So rather than try to answer that, I just want to share a bunch of things that, to touch on those topics. And then you can, you know, you make up your own mind with that. I think like one of the biggest thing for me is that the nature, like the staying in tune with the natural rhythms of the earth and the cycles of the seasons, because like I was just reading some books and getting some ideas, and it's like the technology has made the world where it's like it's 24/7, it's running all the time, it's like constant. And some people, you know, hey, if you're up late at night and you can't sleep and you get online, great, that helps you. But just talking in a bigger picture, it's like it's made the consciousness of the world and people be like 24/7. So it's like that, in that sense, I think people are losing touch with those natural rhythms, because it's just, yeah, I make those decisions. A certain point at night, I pretty much, okay, enough of that for now. And time to get quiet, sit down, relax. Even in the morning, I tend to go to the computer first, but I try to do a little bit of meditation first, look out the window, maybe go out and feed the birds, do something, and then go to the computer. Because it's like this habitual computer stuff, or cell phone, whatever you call it. Yeah, some amazing statistics. Let's see, 89% of America, this was in 2023, cell phone usage. 89% of Americans say they check their phones within the first 10 minutes of waking up. 75% of Americans feel uneasy leaving their phone at home. 75% use their phone on the toilet. 69% have texted someone in the same room as them. 60% sleep with their phone at night. 57% consider themselves addicted to their phone. 55% say they've never gone longer than 24 hours without their phone. 47% of people say they feel a sense of panic or anxiety when their cell phone battery goes below 20%. 46% use or look at their phone while on a date, and 27% use or look at their phone while driving. So pretty amazing how much people do it. But I think it's part of that. That's part of it. It speaks to like the habitual usage, and it's just like becomes like a reflex. And that's like one of the things I put in the description. I had read this phrase from Marshall McLuhan book, is the word interiorization. And it's like with any technology or anything, it becomes like the more people use it, they interiorize the technology and the behavior. So it's like, you know, even just the habitual wake up, check the phone, you know, and whatever, punching buttons, turning things on. It's like, that's another thing that concerns me. It's like it's making us more mechanical, and we're just getting like more robotic. Like you just automatically do these things and we don't think about what else is going on. And you know, even sometimes talking to people, it's like, it's just like, not at this store, but some stores like, yeah, what do you want? Okay, thank you. You know, it's just like, here's your money. It's like very, it's just very consumer mechanical. So how much of that's the technology or not, I don't know, but I think that's my concern, is like it gets people more that way. And that's what I watch is just my own habitual usage of it, and also because I think that there's a lot of books and studies about it, which I haven't read, but there's plenty of books if you want to read more about how it affects your nervous system and then your mental process too. I notice that just because I read, I do a lot of research. And so online, I'll read a lot of articles, and there's a certain point where I just have to say enough, because I start to get like, whoa, that's really good, and then I click on it, and then I read it, and then I want to send that to a friend, and then I copy and paste it, and I put it in the email, and it's like, it becomes this, I realize like how much I'm doing in like a minute, and it's almost like I get sort of, you know, worked up, revved up. There he is. We started. There's one more chair if you want to sit. She's sitting on two chairs.
That's okay.
I got it. She's making herself tall.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how long I'm going to be here.
All right.
I don't want to interrupt. Are you supposed to just keep going?
That's all right. No, I like to. What was I saying about the? I totally forgot what I was saying. About the,
you're doing so many things. You're feeling
like oh yeah, doing so many things. Talking about like the habitual usage of the technology and stuff. Like I even one time years ago, I was sitting at the computer and you know something because you get used to like okay now I do this and it's like it didn't do it right away. Or, you know, it stalled for, and I was like, I got really upset. And then I was like, wait a second, let's try this again and see how long it takes. And I tried it again, and it took like 10 seconds to load. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. I've got to chill out because I've gotten hooked on expecting this to be within 5 or 10 seconds. And if it's not, I started getting all jumpy. Mm-hmm. So that was like one of my like wake up calls, like, just slow down. Slow down. So I think that's part of that word interiorization is like being careful about how much we're taking on the behaviors and the energy and the mechanicalness of the gadgets. So we start, it's almost like we become kind of robotic. In the Kabbalah, which is part of my core, my spiritual path, there's three different pillars on the tree of life. There's the center pillar, and there's the right and the left. And the left one is more, the right one is kind of more artistic and, you know, spontaneous and inspiration. And the left is more sort of information and science. And it's sort of like a robotic function, but it's not purely robotic because it taps into like beings that care for the earth and that serve justice and understanding. So there's these deep elements, but the function of it is more robotic. So when I thought about that, I was like, that's kind of, for me, that's a good model of, there's a certain roboticness that's good. Like when I go to make coffee in the morning, I want the roboticness because I want my coffee. So there's like a good robotic. But, you know, we have, sometimes if it doesn't work or whatever, or if I'm in a bad, you know, if somebody's in a bad mood, maybe the coffee doesn't taste as good. So we still have, an interaction with these things. They're not just like, you know, even though things are getting more robotic, it's not like they're just, I don't want to say they're just like numb non-entities, because they are entities that interact with us on subtle levels. And that's another thing I want to mention a lot too, is that like we made this distinction between like the technology and then, you know, it's like, oh, you got to go spend time in nature to balance that. So like at some level that's true, but then I was thinking about that, it's like, but I think that distinction creates this illusory problem, because they're not two separate. All the gadgets are made from stuff that's coming from the earth and the mining and the resources and the elements. And that goes off on a whole tangent, talking about the usage of, you know, where the technology comes from and that. But that's another thing, that it's the technology has made it so we're like using it and not thinking about what's going on, where it's coming from and where it's going. There's like issues of electronic waste, like where it goes after we're done with it. Like a lot of that's in like Indonesia and China, I think. So but I think that's part of the hook of the technology, is it's got us so enjoying the moment, and we're so in the moment. And yeah, that's helpful when you want to say, hey, I'll be there in 5 minutes, and you know, it's great. But in the bigger picture, it's like we're getting so hooked into the moment that we're forgetting the side effects. There's a powerful book I read called Cobalt Red, about the mining of cobalt, which is a key ingredient in the cell phones and a lot of gadgets, and like 60% of it, I think, comes from the Congo. And there's little kids mining, and you know, there's like a lot of injuries and loss of lives, and the companies there, you know, it's a long story. But I was thinking, like, wow, wouldn't it be different if you turned on your phone and the first thing you saw was like a picture of a child from the Congo or something like that? It's like, that would shake people up. So I'm not trying to put like a guilt trip on it, but it's just, those are things I think about, like how do we deal with these extremes? I don't have the
stupid
exact
thing. Machine is updating. Sorry.
See, machines, gadgets. Yeah, I don't have the answer, but I just, kind of open up the discussion. Yeah, I mentioned this to my Lakota friend, and he talks a lot about for Native people, everything, Indigenous peoples, everything is about relationship and interactive with every being, the earth, the trees, the birds, the sky, the clouds, the wind. It's all interactive. And he mentioned he referred to the technology as like the trickster technology. And I think that made me think about that, because there is that element again where we think we're doing all these amazing things with it, but there's more to the picture. And how much are we being deceived by the usage of it? So that, you know, that could go. And I think a lot of it too is creating, I don't know, other people notice, it just seems like it's almost like more anxiety or jumpiness with people. They're almost like, sort of, no pun intended, wired. This is like more wires or wireless, but people are like wired because you can have it now. It's just more of that. It seems like. So yes, let's see. Digital. I was thinking about the digital too. That's another one. Like the digital. The word digital is like digit, is like numbers, and that's when I learned that. Like the computer, basically, I don't know about the cell phones, but like a lot of the technology with the computer is a binary system, which means like everything is a one and the O, the one and the O, everything. So I just, thinking about that, it's sort of like the programming is this binary thing. Like, I don't know how much that affects or does, you know, what that means, but just for me, it reminds me of like this is actually a limited, like in a bigger picture, a limited form of energy or communication, because it's based on a binary system. I don't know, it makes me think about that limitation, even though there's sort of these endless uses of the technology, but something about the language underneath it is a limited language. So you can ponder that if you want. Another few things that came to mind too were like a lot of the technology is from the military industrial complex. A lot of it started with like Department of Defense, and we've gotten the hand-me-downs. So again, how you use it, but it's just it seems like it may be programming us in certain kind of militaristic subtle ways. And then we've even paid our tax dollars have sort of paid. Ironically or sadly, our tax dollars have helped pay for the studies of those technology, and then we get excited to go buy it. So we're actually like paying for it twice, which is a strange system. The resources thing is a big thing too. This is an interesting book, The Rare Metals War, The Dark Side of Clean Energy and Digital Technologies. So I just wanted to read a couple of bits from here, because made me think about stuff I never thought of. Some of the green technologies so-called green technologies underpinning our modest consumption deals ultimately require more raw materials to be mined than do older technologies. So that, yeah, again, that's like we think we're progressing going forward, but are we? And then the energy and digital transition therefore belong to the wealthy. The most affluent areas are relieved of pollution by dumping its impacts on the most destitute and remote areas. So another element of that, who gets to use it. And then another one I looked up was what percentage of people are online in the world? Where did I write that down? I wrote it down. It was like 67, this is... since October, 67.5% of the world population online and like 63.8% on social media. So on the one hand, that's obviously a huge amount, but then that's 30-something percent that are not. And that is also a huge amount. So that got me thinking too, to think about the whole consciousness with the earth and what's going on. There's a lot of people in their daily life that are not like hooked up or into that. So that's part of what I try to get to a little bit later on, is like this this connecting with nature and the balance, or relating more with nature and the balance, and a certain consciousness that I try to make a point to maintain while I'm using the gadgets. Oh yeah, there was another one I wanted to read. This was amazing. Here's another. But digital technology requires vast quantities of metal. Every year, the electronics industry consumes 320 tons of gold, 7,500 tons of silver, accounts for 22% of global mercury consumption, up to 2.5% of lead consumption. The manufacture of laptops and mobile phones alone swallows up 19% of the global production of rare metals such as palladium and 23% of cobalt. This excludes the other 40 or so metals on average contained in mobile phones. So again, there's like so much going on behind the scene that we don't think about. There was one about the way that email travels. Thought I had that bookmarked. It was like what actually happens when you send an email. Again, like we just think, did you get my email? Boom. It's like that. But where did that quote go? I'll try to find it. Thought I had it, but sorry about that. Yeah, it mentions like where it goes and the data centers that it goes to. You're nodding like you know a lot of this stuff. The where it goes and the data centers and the electricity it takes to maintain the data centers. That's a whole, you know, side. There's like sort of endless amount of stuff you can learn about all this, the technical behind the scenes. But that again, that requires energy and power and, you know, electricity to run this whole system 24/7 with all the backup and all that stuff. So it's a huge network of stuff going on. This is an interesting little book called The Burnout Society. I don't agree with all of it, but it's got a lot of interesting stuff. He basically talks about how the technology is like, he refers to it as sort of like this excess positivity, meaning all kinds of, it's sort of like you. It's sort of on 24/7. You can do all these things. You can achieve a lot. He refers to it as like in the achievement society. My interpretation of that is like, you know, get your own website and have it up and running in 15 minutes. So you can do these things really quick and get it up and you're in business. And then there's like an expectation of success. You know, oh, I got my website. It's up. And then now what? And so he's saying that the underbelly of all this stuff is that there's a lot more depression and anxiety and ADHD because people have this expectation of the ease of stuff, but then when it doesn't follow through, how do you deal with that? See, it derives from the confrontation between the notion of limitless possibilities and the notion of the uncontrolled. Following this reasoning, depression occurs when the subject, striving to display initiative, founders on the uncontrollable. However, the uncontrollable, the irreducible, and the unknown, like the unconscious, are figures of negativity that are no longer constitutive of achievement society, which is dominated by excessive positivity. In social networks, the function of friends, in quotes, is primarily to heighten narcissism by granting attention as consumers to the ego exhibited as a commodity. Now that made me think about that a lot. The social networks, the function of friends is primarily to heighten narcissism by gaining attention as consumers. So there's a lot of truth in that. I mean, like I'm on Substack and I post and yeah, it totally feels good. If I write something, I work really hard and somebody gives it a like. It feels good. I'm acknowledged. My work, somebody liked it. But it's also like, you can get into the whole thing, like how many likes do I have? And somebody else has got 100 likes, and why didn't I get, you know, it's this whole competitive, egotistical stuff. And it's like, it sometimes misses the deeper discussion about what I'm actually writing about. I mean, there are comment sections, so there is that angle too, but it's just, I think some of that superficiality gets accentuated with all the likes and the, and this and that. My mom was telling me about how when my niece years ago, and she was taking a picture of the meal, which is what people first did when they had Instagram. You would like take a photo of your meal and send it to someone. And my mom was like, what are you doing? She was like, I'm taking a photo of the meal to send to friends. Mm-hmm. And she was like, why? You know, like what about, and my niece is very intelligent, but it's kind of like, what about experiencing the actual meal? That's what I think about. Like, yeah, it's fun. You know, again, there's positive sides, but when that's what people are doing all the time, to me, it becomes like, what about experiencing the meal itself? Another fascinating book I read called The Religion of Technology, The Divinity of Man and the Spirit of Invention. This amazed me because there's so many references to, like a lot, without going into the details, it could be NASA, you know, space design, all kinds of stuff. But the idea that for a lot of people, the technology, it has this sort of divine interpretation that we are like transcending our mortality and that we're transcending our problems or whatever. You know, look how fast I can do this. Look at, you know, some of the great, obviously a medical breakthrough or something could help somebody, but it's sort of building this thing that we're transcending, I think of it, it's like where the consciousness then becomes transcending the earth, which is part of the problem because we're losing, you know, if we're losing touch with the actual earth consciousness and where all the stuff comes from to do it, then we're just like, we're starting to float away kind of thing is the image I get from it. But it talks about the, what he calls this Adamic redemption, because that goes back to the Judeo-Christian, you know, the fall of man in the Garden of Eden. So a lot of people look at this technology as like redeeming, we're like redeeming humanity by now catching up with technology. So that's like, that's pretty amazing that, you know, sometimes a simple little gadget thing is like inspired by some kind of religious thing. And also, like it mentions, like the Christ, the ascension of Christ. You know, Christ kind of rose up and there. So that's another where this, they even got like Musk and Bezos, you know, they want to go to other planets. Like they want to use the technology to do all kinds of stuff. But like, hey, what about what's going on here? So again, there's these different interpretations that go off in different tangents. Anybody got any comment or question or anything? So I can catch my breath. Yeah, well, I'm gonna talk about that a little more. Yeah, I'll get to that. Let's see, what else? Yeah, I think like after I read that book, The Religion of Technology, and then I wrote an essay. I subtitled it "Little Techno Savior Moments," because I think that's like I noticed that with myself. Like, it's like, oh, somebody liked my essay, or oh, I got an email, or I got a text. Okay, now I feel better. You know, somebody said hello. I found myself like looking to the phone or looking to the computer for these like little moments that I call techno savior moments. Cause like, oh, now everything's okay. Somebody said, have a nice day. So, you know, but what if there isn't that tech? What if I'm turning that off for a while? Like then it make, like then I sit there and I face that. Now where am I going to get that from? It's not, you know, it's not just a get, it's a, you know, you can give too, but like, okay, it made me that's where I started tuning in. That's where I think the enhancement of relating with nature happens. If you have a kind of a boundary to how much you use the technology, because then that some of that hook is, I got another like, I got another text, I got another, it's like these little moments. But then when it's not, like I sometimes get, it's a fun thing when I'm emailing and corresponding, but then there's like a lull. And I find myself like, I want another email to say they liked what, it's like I'm like waiting on one another email to get that okay. It's like, wait a second, that's where it becomes addictive. And that's where I think the losing touch with nature is like you, in nature you have to sometimes sit quietly and just be with it for a while before you get a message or a response, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like the addiction to instant gratification is, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It creates an instant gratification, like, you know, that
didn't
exist before.
Yeah, that is interesting to see how much it shaped people from how much that didn't exist before to. But yeah, I think that's one of the hooks now is that instant gratification, and then the mood, you know, the anger and the frustration of not getting that. Like the woman that opened, the couple that opened the bookstore up the street, she was telling me like somebody came in and wanted to order a book, and she said like it would take a couple of days to get here. You know, they're like, no, you gotta have it now. So, you know, that, huh?
What did they do to get the book?
They didn't get the book. They probably ordered it on Amazon and got it the next day.
Right.
Probably, yeah.
And that's the thing, too, because Amazon, it comes in like 2 days. They like feed off of that.
Exactly. Yeah, get it now.
No, they know people want things immediately. So.
Or if you have a Kindle, it's download immediately.
That's the thing, yeah. The stuff, yeah, it's, you know, it's whatever, you know. I don't like always have to qualify it. But it's like great when you want it or need it, but in this bigger pattern, I think it's like a, it's created this, this sort of monster where people are, you know, they just get hooked and then they're using this stuff and then they're not thinking about the bigger picture of where the stuff comes from or what amount of energy is being used. And on all those other things.
So, in your words, what would be the solution? Nature?
I don't know. That's why I said, I think I might have said before you got here, like, I don't, like I don't know that I'm going to give solutions tonight. I'm trying to stir, get people to think and stir a discussion. I have my personal sort of solutions of how I deal with it. You know, so that's,
we know what the problem is.
So nature
what's
is one.
The solution?
Well, what specific problem are you naming?
I mean, you just mentioned the technology issue, right? You're saying to reconnect with nature. Is that the solution?
That's part. I mean, that's...
People want the solution.
Yeah.
It's like they want a book from Amazon. Now I want a solution.
But, yeah, that's the thing. The solution is a long-term, slow-down, takes-time thing. And that's hard for people.
Yeah. Don't you think the solution is different for each person?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's hard to talk about a solution because it depends.
Yeah, I'm thinking like a solution that would work for me might not work for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly.
It might not work for you.
Or but in a
really
world,
see everybody through Santa, yeah. But...
in a world where we have everybody addressing the problems, even on social media, everybody's the problem. This is the problem. This is the problem. Very rarely do I find people saying, well, this is the solution. But this could be the solution.
Yeah.
Nobody's offering any solutions.
Yeah, well,
even
I think...
Even if it's different, our solution's different. Somebody's got to say, well, listen, here's a solution to this problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's less you know, controlling usage. You know, the companies with all the updates, like, I might still be on the computer I had a bunch of years ago if they didn't stop, you know, they stopped providing support, and then you got to get a new update. Got to buy, my computer was working fine, but they, like XP, they canceled that. So I have to get a new program, have to get a new computer. So there's one solution, but how do you get the corporations to stop doing that? That's a bigger picture.
I could just, like, say for myself personally.
Yeah.
I shut off the Wi-Fi at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, we all have our different.
So there is no getting on the Xbox, the this box, the that box, whatever game they wanted to play. They don't have to use the internet after 9 p.m. And they're 18 and 21, and they didn't even think about asking me, well, we're grown now. Well, be grown, pay your mortgage, and have your Wi-Fi on. But you're going to decompress at the end of the day.
So that's the solution for your...
That's the solution for my family.
That's good.
Yeah, that's similar, like, to what I do, too. Like, I do a meditation early in the morning, mm-hmm. and then, it depends. Like, if I get, as an artist, if I get inspired... I'll be working on the computer to write something, but generally, in mm-hmm. the evening, it's...
Yes.
Calm down time.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I wanted to mention too is like the intuition that's going by the wayside with the gadgets because all the information and the answers are supposedly all right there. So I think people are losing touch with their intuition. So like last night I turned everything down, but then I was like, I just felt like some urge was like, I want to check online. And I was glad I did because there was a couple of messages there that I wanted to, you know, that were helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, for me, that's like a thing with intuition. Even sometimes I do a lot of research and I'll just be like almost mindlessly, oh, I just want to check a website. And I find a really interesting article.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't just intuitively or spontaneously do that, I mean, I have my routines, but I balance, but also there's that spontaneity and intuitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing. I think the gadgets are squashing our sense of intuition because it's all expected and you know where to find it. But there's like curveballs and there's things. I had like somebody like I could never reach on the phone and like all of a sudden one day I just like picked up the phone and called them and hey, how you doing? I got them. And that was the same kind of intuitive, spontaneous moment. And I was even telling someone else, oh yeah, you can never get them on the phone. I'm like, yeah, I got them. But that was the moment of just like unexplainable. Now I'm going to call. So that's one of my like ways of not getting to be the robot and the mechanical dealing with the computer. It's like going to text somebody. It's like, yeah, I don't know if it's the best time to do it. Instead of automatically thinking, I'm going to text them, they can read it whenever the heck they want. I don't care. But it's like sometimes you text somebody and it just might be a better moment. Mm-hmm. So that I think that's one thing, that's one solution for me, not solving all the technology problems. But it makes me a participant in the stuff more than just using it or being used by it. Like I feel like it's like even the gadgets are made of quartz or whatever from the earth. It's got energy and it feels things. You know, somebody's energy can make a gadget not work. That's happened. So again, if you look at it as you're interrelated and it's like elements from nature and the earth that have been put in these forms, then there, you know, that's one way to relate with nature better, at least while relating with the gadget. The other topic is just like I told a relative at the holiday meal, like, oh, I'm giving a talk, and I told him the topic about finding serenity in the digital world, and he was like, push the off button. So I thought that was kind of funny, but there's truth to it. It's funny, but there's truth to it, because that is, that to me is a big solution. You just turn it off.
Just which disconnect.
Is digital. Which is digital anyway.
Which is what? Button. Oh, yeah.
Unplug it.
Yeah, but that's one of the things, like I like part of my practice now is to, it's like what I call kind of building up my own energies, like off the grid energies. Like I don't want necessarily, I don't want or expect that the grid will go down, but people talk about, years from now and it's possible, the day when there's a wind or rainstorm and the power goes out, hurricane, superstorm Sandy, mm-hmm. I had to walk, a few blocks to somebody whose power was on to check my email. But basically for 6 days, or the computer is getting repaired. So it's like, wow, I have the day now to not check the email. Like, what am I going to do? And that takes a little stuff. It's like, oh yeah, I can read, but that makes me go, I'm gonna go for a walk, or I'm gonna do this. And that's so part of my daily discipline is to kind of build up to have my consciousness and my energy be tuned into that, so I'm not attached, like emotionally, spiritually, to the gadget, world and the consciousness. Because a lot, I think a lot of younger people in their teens or 20s or whatever, if they don't have if the power's out in the laptop, they're like, yeah. Mom, what do we do? Dad, what are we gonna do today? Like they're lost. So that's part of my, like I said, build up the energy of not having that, even, while using it. I think that helps me use it more calmly, but it also helps just, I feel like spiritually I'm tuned into that this all this stuff is very short in the span of, human existence. And there's cultures, all the indigenous peoples that have lived thousands and thousands of years without any of this stuff. So it's in us to live and enjoy life and appreciate and have value and care, care for the earth and all that stuff. It's in us to do that without the gadgets. So I personally want to maintain that energy in this world now, because it is a very gadget world and I use them too. But that's one of my, I don't know if you call it solution, but that's just as a way of life, which again gets the Tao Te Ching I mentioned at the beginning, the original picture for the Tao, part of the explanation of it is it's like somebody walking on the path, and it's to go and pause, to take a step and pause, take another step and pause. So it's like built into the way of life to to look around, to pause, to check out what's going on. But that's like the, that's become the technology with the 24/7 and go, 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 is this like opposite energy. So again, that's like people are being sort of programmed, they're programming to like, and it's hard to just slow them down to say, okay, now we're not going to do that. That's, you know, how humanity is dealing with that or deals with that, that's too big a question for me to even try to answer. Another word that ties into that, online. We're online a lot. So when I like to look up the etymology of words. So the word rule, which is connected with a Reich, like an empire, the root of that is reg, like regal or Reich, and it means to move or direct in a straight line, to rule. So at some level, you know, I think like, and other people have said this too, like, in another way, we're being controlled, we're like being online, we're kind of being herded and controlled in a certain way, you know, with the surveillance and this and that. And even I've heard people talk about John Trudell, a native guy, he would talk about when you're out protesting, if you've got your cell phone, they can be tracking you and keeping track of all the protesters. So it's like, there's this element of like that the online in a word way is kind of like they're in a way they're herding, they're keeping us online and all, you know, all the potential for all our information and technology and it's all that stuff is, you know, which way it goes, that's up for grabs, but there is definitely people that want to control that and kind of keep everybody in line. So that's again part of my thing is like I don't want to be in line most of the time. I want to be a spiral. I want to be a circle. I want to be a squiggly, spontaneous thing, whatever.
But I think that it's really up to us to say, okay, these are the tools. This is technology. I get it. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. So why don't I take these tools instead of being used by the tools? Mm-hmm. I'm going to use this tool to create something different that I want to see.
Oh, yeah.
Something revolutionary.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't want the straight line thing. I want to create squiggly lines or spirals. I'm going to use this tool to do that. And anybody else that wants to follow me, let's all use our tools to do that, to fight the power.
Yeah, I mentioned that at the beginning. Like, there's a lot of positives to this stuff, which,
But who's willing to fight the power?
Yeah, well,
To take the tool, the technology, and say, you know what, let's go against the grain.
That's a good question. There's, you know, a lot of people do use the social media and gather and, you know, get together and create stuff. So yeah, there are ways to use it. I agree. There's ways to use it positively.
Maybe not so positive.
Yeah. It's a tricky discussion to start trying to getting into giving it one answer because there's a lot. You know, this book I just got today is like it's called Scorched. This guy really, I haven't read it. I just glanced through it today, but I wanted to look at it before coming here. It's called Scorched Earth: Beyond the Digital Age to a Post-Capitalist World. And I don't know how much solutions he has in it, but pretty much it's like he really rails against the whole system of the technology and the, you know, the not only the minerals and the mining, but then also the behavior patterns. And one native friend of mine, she calls it asocial media or something like that. Because, you know, on the one hand, yeah, people are gathering and doing stuff, but a lot of it's become online in groups. Like, what about meeting in person and the power of you know, move? Like, are we just gonna like all click to stop mining in some country? You know, hey, I just clicked to stop the mining. Like, There's a point where it's people power is actually people gathering and doing things. So, you know, that's another thing where the the behavior where people think they're actually doing stuff online, they can get lost in thinking they're actually solving things, but they're not.
Yeah, I do believe that there's definitely some not so good ways and some positive ways that you can use technology. I mean, it's almost, for example, I do work in biomedic, if not for technology.
You what? Oh, you met?
He's from Mexico. We met because of the internet. Mm-hmm. So if we didn't have it, that wouldn't have happened. Or it could have happened, but I wouldn't have known about it in another pathway. I think it was just that. But
It's part of the fabric of the society, yeah. You know, the world now.
I think that if people are open to genuine connection and actually informing each other and going into it with an open heart, like, that can be a positive thing. But at the same time, it's important to care for yourself in the way that's right for you and limit it for yourself in the way that is healthy for you.
Yeah, there's such a prevalent thing now. There's going to be positives. You know, I have friends that don't live in this state, and I get to communicate with them every day or whenever because of the phone, you know, or the email or the text. So, you know, yeah, there are those sides to it. It's, again, it's a tricky discussion. But I try to talk somewhat about the, like, what I think we're losing touch with, because that seems to be the bigger direction of it. Like, a friend of mine used to live out in the woods in Manorville, one of my closest friends in the universe. And so I would get up and I'd have, like, I would decide, like, what day to go visit him. I didn't text him, like, he didn't have any gadgets. He had, like, virtually no possessions. Probably one of the happiest people I've ever met. And so it was like, I wasn't about to text him in his tent. Hey, is it good to come up today? I just trained me to, like, tune in. Like, what, you know, maybe I had a dream last night where I saw him, like, definitely I'd be going. Or I just tune in. Wow, nah, it doesn't feel like the day today. Or, yeah, I think so. It just trained me to tune in more to when to go see somebody or not to go see somebody. So that, again, is like that ability, that's what I call, like, off the grid ability. Mm-hmm. All that innate psychic, or whatever you want to call it, intuition, whatever words we put on it, it's like that's our, that we have that ability, that natural connection that we have that ability to, like, that's what I want to see more encouraged and fostered, you know, because the other stuff is, like, taking over, where it's just the mindless, you know, gadget. Like, if I want to find a restaurant in town, I would come ask Dawn, because she works here. But, you know, a lot of people are on the gadgets, like, tell me where to eat in Port Jeff. So, you know, maybe they find a great restaurant, I don't know, but I'm old school. Like, I want to talk to somebody in town who has eaten there and do that. So that's what I mean by, it just seems like people are getting so swayed by follow the leader, in a sense, the gadget leader.
But even in that, like, when I'm listening to what you're saying, even in that, like, because back in the day, let's say 1972, there wasn't this technology, right? And you would ask somebody, where's a good place to eat? You would ask that person, they would have to know what your palate is like. They would have to know what your desires and your taste buds are like. How in the hell would they know that, right?
You're just asking somebody. You add a chubby person me, and I've eaten everywhere, and I go, well, what do you feel like eating?
But you're still asking somebody else. Mm-hmm. To, you know, you, I don't eat meat, you do eat meat, right? But you're still going to that person saying, listen, hey, where's a good place to eat?
Yeah, I just mean it like that there's
I understand
a local, saying. You know, the local knowledge kind of thing that...
Not relying on Yelp.
Yeah, which... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is sometimes true and sometimes not.
It's like, the funny thing is we're relying on something or somebody all the time anyway. Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, we are.
Whether
people,
it be technology, like, whether it be people, things, you're relying on something anyway.
Well, that's like, I've heard people, the more, like, I heard a friend talking on about how the, like, the more the gadget, like, I had this experience recently too, a few times, where the more it gets gadgeted, like, I bought some batteries the other day, and the guy, I said, oh, if I can't use them, can I return them? And he goes, yeah, but he didn't tell me I had to show a driver's license. So I was like, oh, I want to return them. It was like, oh, I need your driver's license. And then the computer wouldn't let him override that. It was like, there's these points where, like, if the gadget's going to control the answer, like, we can, you know, some, you can get, like, trapped into that. So, like, I'm leery of that. And, you know, in for the future, it's like, where is it going where, you know, you're online, you want your whatever, you want your medical records, you want your personal information, and for whatever reason, it's like saying, you know, nope, that's not right. Do not recognize password or whatever. Like, then what's going to happen? I don't know. I mean, humans can make errors too, but this is the point about when the technology becomes, you know, more and more the boss, that I think that's kind of, that gets a little bit freaky to me.
When? So. What time is this over, buddy?
I don't know, until about 7. What time is it now?
7:04.
Oh, okay. Can we go a little longer? Is it?
So
wrap it up?
I'm going to leave anyway, but before I leave, I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
So what I'm noticing, the gadget is now in the minds of the people, because the people now are emulating what gadgets are, and I can't get a straight answer from anybody without them referring to the gadget.
See, that's exactly, yeah, that's what I'm, yeah, it's all, like, I mentioned that beginning.
Computer. You're not the computer, but you're not letting me pass, but you're thinking like the computer that was, that trained you.
That's what, yeah, exactly what I mentioned maybe before we got here, the word interiorization, where people start to take on, even, you know, driving a car or whatever it is, you start to take on the motions and the behaviors of the gadgets.
Of the programmer who programmed the gadgets.
That's true too.
Not even the gadgets.
Yeah.
The programmer who programmed the gadgets.
Exactly. Because it, like, you know, I looked up the other day, I looked up, somebody mentioned somebody who wrote a book. It was like, his name was Graham Lindsay. So I typed in Graham Lindsay.
And you got Lindsey Graham, didn't
what
you?
Came up was, all that came up was the politician wacko guy, Lindsey Graham. So I'm like, that program is not, you know, that's like not doing what.
Or is it?
Well, it's designed, it's focusing, yeah. One time I wanted a picture of a twilight to go with a poem, The Night Sky. I put that in, and the first 100 pages, whatever, was the vampire TV show called Twilight. Like if
that movie.
Yeah.
I didn't know what you were talking about for a half second.
If that's not losing touch with the natural world, like, come on, you know. But that's part of the, you know, like you were saying, but I was talking about the mechanical people becoming more mechanical and robotic in their behavior and in their thinking. Yeah, because you just, you know, where's the answer? Look it up. What about, you know, it's like, it's almost like cliche stereotype, the, you know, the indigenous person sitting outside and like, I saw the bird go in that direction, and that means, you know, it's almost like cartoonish to us, but to me that's actual, like, that's what I would spend more time thinking about, like looking at the clouds, seeing where the wind's blowing, that kind of stuff. So that's part of my you know, not getting,
so you want to go back to that
overly mechanized,
possible.
Well, it's, to me it's back, and but doing that in the present as much as I can in the present. I've had that sometimes with, you know, just like walking down the street. Sometimes I'm just like, I don't plan to go visit you. But, you know, I'm walking down the street. And sometimes I feel like, yeah, this doesn't feel right today. Sometimes I just walk in and say hello, and then we have a really good talk.
Oh, but, am I slow?
Yeah, but that's like that spontaneity. Is like that feeling is part of, that's, to me, that's part of that whole nature vibe and stuff. It's like, because we're, you know, we're part of all that. So the feeling that guides us, you know, whether it's, you know, the bird said go there, or the dream said go there, or just in the moment a spontaneity said go there, like I like to encourage that in how I do stuff rather than just get overly mechanized.
Well, you know what I always say, man, I say that you're a brilliant mind, right? But I think I'm gonna say you're a brilliant mind, but I always said to you that if you use the technology, we have 4 people sitting here.
Yeah.
Right? If you use the technology to the best of your ability, we could have 400 people here, or 40 people here, hearing and tasting what you know, your information, to spread what your agenda even further.
That's a whole other topic.
But if we use the technology to do so, so many more people, because, you know, I think you're a brilliant mind, so many people would say, holy shit, he's right.
Maybe,
I'm
yeah.
I'm trying to move my life in this fashion.
Yeah, I hear you, and I'm also like, sometimes just reaching a few people that really makes a difference too means more to me than whatever. We can have that discussion, another time.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do it the old-fashioned way. 5 people heard it. Maybe each one of us tell 5 people.
Yeah, that's true too.
You tell 5 people.
Now we're relying on somebody in the busy day and time. You tell 5 people, and you tell 5 people, and the word never gets out. That's the unfortunate thing.
Yeah, that's a whole nother. I think that's a whole nother discussion about who, how much influence and this and that, numbers and stuff. But yeah, so rather than go into that, I want to read, this is a book of Native American songs and poems. I love this. I read this. It's so simple. It just reminds me of what I'm talking about. It's an Inuit. They're the way up north people. It's I won't even try to pronounce the guy's name, but it's somebody's song, and it says, he went adrift on the ice while sealing, I guess hunting for seal, and only reached shore after a week of hardship. And this is the little poem or song. I am happy, this is good. There is nothing but ice all around, that is good. I am happy, that is good. For land we have slush, that is good. I am happy. This is good. When I do not know enough, it is good. When I tire of being awake, I begin to wake. It gives me joy. I just love that as a reminder of the simple contentment, appreciation. And I think that line, when I do not know enough, it is good. I want that to be like the bumper sticker for the information age.
I will say the one positive that I've gotten from, not that I'm a big social media person, I tend to forget about it all the time. There are a couple of creators that I follow, and some of them are Inuk, or they're Maori, and
yeah.
I do like being able to see them share their cultures.
Sure. Oh yeah, that's one of the greatest.
I'm certainly not getting up in the middle of the night to go find out what's on. I don't even take my devices go to, as soon as I walk in the door, I throw them in the charging box,
okay,
and we'll keep going. And in the morning I'll go, ooh, there's like 700 messages, I should have.
Yeah, that's
the... back. And then they'll go, we know, Dawn, you weren't going to look at your phone once you got home. Mm-hmm. So it is a little bit of conditioning for people to not be reliant.
Thanks.
And to
Yes.
use it just
Ten.
As the tool.
Who gets this, you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not me.
Thanks.
Dawn, I have a question for you. How long did it take when you turned off the Wi-Fi at 9 o'clock with your children, how long did it take them to make the adjustment?
I must have a very strong personality because I have two of the most compliant teenagers known to mankind. But when they were younger and devices were first becoming more prevalent and getting online and playing their games and things like that, there was a device called, and you did use a device. It's called Circle. And once you hook it into your Wi-Fi, it picks up all of the IP addresses of every device in your house. You put the name that it belongs to and what the device is, and you set timers for how much Wi-Fi exposure mm-hmm. that they can have. So when they were very young, they had 1 hour. When, as they got older, like middle school age, they got 2 hours. By the time they were in high school, and bearing in mind my oldest was a COVID grad, so they were home for almost a year on computers, so I did have to adjust, but then they only got them between the hours of 9 and 3. So it was the same as the school day. So I've always had very strict control of how much digital information. They were never allowed to bring a phone or a device or an iPad or a laptop to the dinner table, breakfast table, lunch table. They were very specific spaces and times that were appropriate. And nothing else. And I will say it was harder with my oldest one, who's on the autism spectrum, and that tends to be a device that they use for communication and things like that. Very blessed that we therapied him right into compliance. And he really did not require that device for more than a few hours at the time. So I think it has to be something that they grow up adjusting to.
Part of the culture of
yes.
their family.
You know, and they were not getting, I mean, I see kids now, they're like in second grade with a cell phone. Oh, hell no.
Oh, yeah.
No, unless they were, it wasn't really until middle school.
Yeah, that's the condition.
When they started like sports and things like that, because there are no pay phones. So it's not like I could say, put a dollar in your pocket in quarters in case you have to call home. That doesn't exist anymore. Like when we were growing up, that you just went to a payphone, you called your parents, told them to come get you, you were done. So I did, by the time they were in like eighth grade and doing sports and after school activities, they did get a phone. But it better just go right back in that charging box. Don't walk around with it.
That's the solution. Mm-hmm. It's the culture and the fabric of the family that you and your husband, I assume, right?
Yes.
That you cultivated that. You said, this is how it's going to be. But when technology hit everybody, all of us as parents said, you know what, fuck it, you know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, embrace it,
free,
just whatever.
Just go,
I mean,
here's
the
phone,
give me a break.
Fucking,
well, yeah, that's
6 months old, go.
Yeah.
One, now
yeah.
it's out of control.
It's, yeah, well, you know, then you have to, yeah. I
when
guess everybody said, has to embrace their control.
When you said Maori, like that made me think too, the like, thanks
got
a lot,
got
appreciate
it.
It was so nice meeting you.
He's at Healing Nature on Main Street.
Healing Nature yes. Herb Shop, right up on
nice.
East Main Street, all
right? Awesome.
Like when you said the Maori, like that, I think that's just amazing nowadays. You know, I can get online and watch some, you know, a native person or give a
mm-hmm.
talk, and I can learn all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely.
So I love that. But like, okay, now I step back because I'm like kind of a big picture. I don't miss the small, but I'm the big picture guy. It's like
mm-hmm.
this trajectory of, you know, 500 years of colonialism and capitalism and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we're at this point where we need, because of all that destruction and negativity. we need those voices from the Native Indigenous peoples. Mm-hmm. So it's like a gift to be able to get online and do that. You know, it's like part of using that, but like in the bigger, but like if that's the solution, I don't know. Like in my friend in Lakota, they don't have a word for solution mm-hmm. or goal. So like when I first heard that, I was like what is
it? It's always journey.
Because it's about the process and just being in the moment and seeing what happens.
It's a constant evolution.
Yeah, it's the flow. So yeah, so but just, you know, so I treasure that I can get online and listen and learn stuff, but I also see it, you know, it's like in the big picture, that's part of the like trying to, you know, keep things in balance and trying to say, you know, quote, save the environment and all that. So like I quote, you know, use that in a good way mm-hmm. and I'm grateful for it. You know, it's like, it's just part of where we're at this moment in history, that's what's going on. You have these Native people online giving talks and stuff. So, you know, from miles away, and, you know, that's cool. I think it's wonderful. So, and again, you can counter everything with
it. And as tragic as my children's growing up was, it didn't stop me from downloading stuff to my Kindle every day. So I don't think I was not a paragon in any way for myself. I just didn't want them to have that environment. Yeah. But as an adult, I chose for myself to go down the rabbit hole of the Kindle.
It's an organization. It was I read about it in the paper where it's something eighth, mm-hmm. and it's the parents have pledged not to give their children any device until eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I heard somebody say that kids should be able to. Read, write, and cook a meal before they get the cell phone. I thought that's a good. Yeah, I just want to finish up two things. Well, John Trudell, he was an amazing Native speaker. He used the phrase technologic civilization, like technology, technologic, like as a way to sum up, like there's no logic to it. I mean, there's some scientific logic to it, but again, that's part of that. Stuff where we think it's doing something, you know, as much as we enjoy these certain parts of it, in the bigger picture, I'm just wary of what we think it's doing. And is it, you know, we think it's the answer in solving all these things, so, I don't know, time will tell. And then the other one is light, the light and the screen. I had one time my Native friend was visiting at my apartment and I was on the computer and he tapped me on the shoulder and he like pointed outside to the sun and he was like, that's the true light. Mm-hmm. It's like unforgettable to me because, you know, again, we spend so much time in front of the screens and there is literally a electric light emanating there. So again, you can go off on the studies and tangents about that, but it's just another reminder to me when I'm at the computer after a while, I'm like, oh yeah, don't forget the sunlight. Go out at night, look at the stars.
Oh, yeah.
Notice how the light, you know, changes during the seasons. Just stay in touch with the light because it seems like sometimes people are, it's like sci-fi film. You know, people are walking around kind of like bug-eyed. It's like they've been looking at the screen all day and their eyes are just like,
oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
My oldest never needed glasses until COVID.
I noticed a lot more younger people have glasses. I think
when
that's...
he was on that computer that by the end of that year, having to be on a computer, he would now require reading glasses.
I noticed that, like, a lot of younger people seem to get glasses earlier.
My sister had to get reading glasses because of her computer.
Mm-hmm.
She had a big chunky one, too. You know, like a big desktop.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, this is definitely in tune, aware, already, like, aware of what I'm talking about groups, so it's appreciate it. Anybody want to ask a question or say anything? Wrap it up.
I was thinking before about when you mentioned that the energy that email takes.
Oh yeah, I wish I could find that quote, but I'll try to find it while you're talking.
There's also studies about like now that AI is coming into use and how much energy that takes, even worse. And the thing is, it's just becoming so, that's a whole other like conversation, becoming so like normalized and like used for certain things, and then other things, it's because it's also, again, something that's really convenient and something that's like helpful to a degree, but also just like there's so much that bad that it does to the environment.
Well, there's some people I read on online. There's these hardcore, you know, energy, you know, studying the technology and green, you know, the fake green, this and that. And that's where I learn about the data centers and the amount of electricity and the cooling and all the stuff it takes to run the stuff that we think is just, you know, whammo. So that's the whole other topic. Oh, I found it. And this is only the manufacture of digital devices. Operating electric grids will of course generate additional digital activity, and therefore additional pollution, the effects of which are becoming clearer. A documentary investigating the environmental impact of the internet traces the journey of a simple email. Once it leaves the computer, it reaches the modem, another thing you have to gadget, travels down the building to a connection center, transits from an individual cable to national and international exchanges, and then goes to a message host, usually in the US. In the data centers of Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, the email is then processed, stored, and sent to its recipient. All told, our email travels 15,000 kilometers at the speed of light. So that's just like a simple example. But yeah, that's like, there's so many tangents. I mean, I could do a whole, this could be a whole, maybe there are college courses on this stuff.
Yeah.
Because it could go in so many directions. But I tried to, you know, just give like a whole basic overview of this is like the environmental issues. And this is where you can, while you're using it, try to balance it. And then also try to build up your energy of not using it. So that's my basic, as my basic mode of dealing with it, so I don't, you know, so I, because I use it for work and, you know, people, and so I use it, but also, you know, in that bigger picture, in the, whatever, nurturing the inner spiritual parts, it's like, gotta, for me, it has to have the balance. I don't know if I want to use the word balance, it's just like more, just that energy of the not computer time or the not gadget time, and trying to make the calmest of that. Mm-hmm. I had one time where I was at the computer and I literally, like, I felt like the spiritual energy just, like, I jumped back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the? I mean, it's not that kind of experience. I'm used to different stuff, but I was like, what just happened? And when I analyzed it, I felt like, because I'm sensitive to that stuff, like I was, you ever like watching a movie or you're into the, like my consciousness just went into the screen, and it was like I had lost touch with my physical body, and it was, my interpretation was like the spirits were like reminding me, like, get back in there, dude, get back in your body and be centered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was so visceral that now when I'm at the computer, I'm much more like, when I start to get, I've been at the computer 20 minutes and I start to get, I'm like, I step back and I take a break because I don't want to like spontaneously feel like I'm like, you know, it's sort of scary, but to feel like some invisible energy is pushing me out of my chair. Like, I don't want to do that every day at the computer.
Yeah.
But I took it as a good lesson. Like they were saying, it was like a parental saying, you know, mm-hmm. turn off your computer. So yeah, when it's on. But again, I think we have the control, we have the power to say that thing's on 24/7, but so is the sun and the moon and the earth and vibrations and all that. So, you know, pick your time zone. All right, thanks so much for listening. This was fun and interesting. See, after talking a lot, this calms me down too.